Welcome to Beyond the Bedside, the podcast for physicians considering non-clinical careers. This podcast provides information regarding non-clinical careers both within and outside the healthcare industry. Welcome to our third episode of Beyond the Bedside. Today we're having the first of a two-part installment of an interview with Dr. Douglas Apple. Doug is the former chief medical officer for Spectrum Health in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Spectrum Health is a $5 billion system located in western Michigan. And Doug will tell you a little bit more about his journey from a clinical physician to a non-clinical administrator in a healthcare system. Doug's going to share with us today some really valuable insights about the need for leadership training, a physician development curriculum for organizations who are putting more and more physicians into leadership roles. We're seeing a large number of physicians in roles that traditionally have not been occupied by physician leaders. There are many more physician CEOs of organizations today. The informatics industry has really provided physicians with tremendous opportunities to assume leadership roles as well, as more and more hospitals follow the mandates for improving health information systems in healthcare organizations. So Doug will share some really valuable insights with us about how Spectrum and he have approached these opportunities within a healthcare organization. I think you'll find it very valuable. I'm very excited that Doug agreed to join us, and I think you'll get a tremendous amount of information from this episode.
So today we are lucky to have with us Douglas Apple, MD, who is the former chief medical officer for Spectrum Health in Grand Rapids. Welcome to Beyond the Bedside, Doug.
Thank you, Norm.
Really appreciate you taking the time out to interview with us. I'm looking forward to this interview and anxious to see what you have to say about your transition from non-clinical medicine, or from clinical medicine rather, to non-clinical medicine.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
So give us a little bit of background about yourself. Where did you attend medical school? Where are you from?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Lansing, Michigan, or at least where I was born and raised. In undergraduate school, actually starting out as an accounting major, I had interest in medicine all along, but I never really pursued it until I actually started to get into my accounting courses and did really well, and I just didn't find it as stimulating. So I paused and reflected on the need to go back to school, searching out how to become a physician. And so I took that approach, changed direction. Medical school came up after I got married with my wife and I choosing to go overseas. So we went to a school called Saba, Saba University School of Medicine. It's on a small island called Saba in the Dutch West Indies, where we spent 2 years there with our classroom work. And then I actually did my clinical rotations in St. Louis, Chicago, and Detroit, and finished in 2000. When I graduated with my MD degree.
How did you decide what area of medicine to focus on? And did you really ever consider going down the surgery path?
I did a little bit. However, let me tell you that prior to going to medical school, I also worked in an emergency room as an orderly. Back then, we were still called orderlies. And so the experience I had in the emergency room really was much more around the adrenaline of not just, you know, the accident victims, but also illness. And so when I got through into my third and fourth year of clinicals in medical school, I started to really quickly identify what it was that I might want to do long term. And at that time, it was really internal medicine that offered me at least the next level of education and experience before I started to think about where it was that I wanted to be, potentially even as a specialist. So I pursued internal medicine. I was accepted at Michigan State University in the Grand Rapids campus, where I attended there until I graduated in June of 2003.
What career path did you pursue at that point? Did you focus on ambulatory medicine, hospital medicine, a combination?
Yeah, well, like most internal medicine programs, a lot of what your experience and knowledge is built on is the inpatient setting. I had interest in that, but not just in the internal medicine focus, but also with a lot of the specialists that I had worked with. I was never against, or it wasn't that I didn't like doing the primary care ambulatory pathway. However, my interest at the time in residency was about which potential fellowship would I want to do. When I graduated in 2003, I joined the hospitalist group that was established at Spectrum Health, and I was the sixth physician that joined this group. And I decided at the time I was going to wait at least a year or two to choose a fellowship track. Some of that was because of just wanting to make sure I knew what my professional drive and my career path was going to be. But actually more so was because it was just recently in 2002 at the time that my wife and I had twin daughters, and they were born premature at 30 weeks. So for me, there was a personal choice to not pick up and move my family at that time. And so I really got the benefit of not moving with regards to having to choose a fellowship track so soon. And secondly, I also got the benefit of being an attending, you know, for the duration that I had, which was the plan was to be an attending for, you know, as little as a year, maybe as much as two or three. And then one, my daughters would be old enough where I felt like we could pick up and move. And secondly, I'd have a much clearer idea of what I wanted to commit myself to as far as a specialty track.
When did you decide to continue practicing in hospitalist medicine rather than pursuing a fellowship and becoming some type of specialist?
Well, it's funny the way you asked that question. It was almost like the way you stated it, that I had a conscious moment where I said, nope, I'm going to stay as a hospitalist. The reality is I got so enthralled with working with my colleagues, my partners in the hospitalist division, that it was a matter of two, almost 3 years into being an attending when I realized that my focus wasn't about a fellowship track. My focus was about how are we providing the best care? How was I doing it? How were my partners doing their role? And then how are we doing it collectively together? Because we used to sit every lunch hour together, and we did it not only for camaraderie, but we did it just so we could make sure everybody was doing okay in their day. And at the time, the physical plant of Spectrum Hospital, the Butterworth campus, was really only 14 floors in size. And as I said, there were six of us. And we would talk about, you know, the running joke, gravity rounds, you know, starting at the top and working your way down. We didn't really have, at that time, a structure other than, you know, Doug Apple's list of patients, and then each hospitalist had their list of patients, and we just kind of left the office in the morning, went out and saw our patients, and then we would touch base at lunch and then wrap it up at the end of the day. I asked the question once, I said, well, what about if we start thinking about how to do this differently so that we're not having to go to the floor, and then you get there and the patient's not there because they're away on, you know, a schedule for a procedure, or somebody else is seeing that patient. And so now you have to wait. You don't have access to the chart. This is back in the day before EMRs. So for me, it was a matter of within 2 to 3 years, I quickly realized my focus wasn't about the fellowship track, as I stated. It really became about how we were doing our best work. So I got to learn how to be an attending from the medical aspect of care, but I also got the experience of being able to look, how do we do our jobs better? How is it that we can actually improve upon this? You know, so that it was great to walk an average of 6 to 8 miles a day throughout a hospital, but in all honesty, it wasn't very efficient.
You said something interesting there in response to my question that I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about. I've heard mentors and coaches talking to young physicians, and they talk a lot about having a a plan built out that the student or the resident is going to progress down. You a couple of times have alluded to the fact that there were points in your life where you thought you were going in one direction and all of a sudden something came to you and you decided to head in a totally different direction. I'm sure you've talked to a lot of other physician leaders. What percentage of us do you think really follow the track that we've laid out? We're going to do our residency and then our fellowship. And then 10 years later, we're going to take a leadership position or a non-clinical position versus just a very almost responding to chance or responding to fortuitous events that come our way.
So I think it's actually the latter that happens more often. It's not to say that there isn't individuals out there that have really thought through, you know, what track they're going to take and then they pursue it. But the variables may change. You know, if somebody wants to go into academic medicine and they decide that they want to go to Harvard versus Yale versus another, well-known institution, that can change depending on who you meet along the way, as well as where your own interest. You know, the one thing that I really quickly learned is that I needed to make sure I was responsive to the things that I knew, as well as to appreciate the things that I was just learning in that situation. And as I went through, as you know, early on, as you point out, and I appreciate you picking up on it, sitting there thinking about my accounting grade, I realized at the moment that, you know, here's a situation where I could keep going and not react, but something in me said, I need to think through this and consider another option. No different than the fellowship track and what to do next now that the family was healthy and getting older and ready to move. The reality is at the moment, it was something that drove me to say, how do we do this job better? And then see what I can do next with this. At that point, I still didn't think I was going down a leadership track or a non-clinical role that would bring into, you know, opportunities of administrative duties. I was just looking at how do I solve that problem today and how do I do it for the collective group of us.
How long was it from the time that you graduated from your residency in 2003 until you accepted really your first formal non-clinical responsibilities? And was that a titled responsibility or was it just sort of an informal understanding?
Yeah, so it took really about 3 years, but with that, though, there was a few activities that really led into the opportunity to see what was going to potentially come from different engagements than just rounding on patients. And I'll give you an example. Being a physician champion of a certain project is one that really where I started is how to improve hand hygiene on a certain hospital unit floor. And at the time, it was more about just myself connecting with that unit. And yes, I was given a title. There was no administrative pay. There was no administrative hours set aside from clinical duties. It was pretty much how to do this, you know, within the structure of what I still had to do, which was round on my full list of patients. But that experience, though, led into not only learnings for myself, but also learnings of how others looked at how I could perform my job. Therefore, the next thing that came available was a formal title in a medical directorship. And ultimately that led of a small program into the hospitalist division within the medical staff. So it just continued to grow from there. But you know, it really was initially about the first 3 years of just working with my colleagues, trying to problem solve certain things that we thought was needed to be prioritized to help us do our job better.
What was the most satisfying to you about taking on those types of responsibilities?
For me, it's actually working with other team members that, you know, have a common goal to solve a certain problem and then being able to go through and one, it's great when we solve it, or at least we solve it for what is the best option at the time. But what I really like is being able to see the different interactions that we have, the different ideas that we have to be able to problem solve a solution. And I think that is where, when we get together and start focusing on what do we need to achieve, how are we going to do that as a group? to me, that's really satisfying. You know, a lot of times, and I think this happens even quite a bit, maybe more today than it did back then, there's a huge focus on results-driven expectations. But my greatest reward is being able to go through and monitor and feel the process of how we do it to get to a certain result. I try not to be, you know, too prescriptive of how we're going to do something to get to a certain result, because I may not have the best idea. What I really want to have is the best level of engagement and the best level of input, as well as effort by the teams, teammates that are going to help solve this.
I'd like to ask you one question about teams. Has your definition of team, did you find that your definition of team evolved as you went from medical school to residency to leadership roles after your residency when you were in attending?
It has quite a bit. And, you know, I can't say that somebody gave me a formal definition, but my experience, and maybe this was just a false assumption, you know, and unfortunately, maybe it's a pattern that I just had, but there's this sense that, you know, when you're the physician, you're the doctor, society has put us in a certain position of being responsible, accountable. And so there's this notion in my mind at the time, you know, I'm the doctor, what I say goes. And not only does the staff around me taking care of a patient, but also the patient will follow what I say. And the reality is that when you talk about the team-based work we have to do today, you need to lead the teams, but you can't tell them what to do. And quite honestly, you really can't control anybody. What you need to be able to do is work with the team in a different way than I had in medical school, as far as this preconceived assumption, as far as what my role would be as a physician and how I would, you know, lead the team based on my old definition. From that experience has really, I think, fostered for me a way in which I've continued to evolve it over the years, especially as my leadership titles and expectations have grown.
So, Doug, when you took your first really, I guess, paid leadership position or non-clinical position, you mentioned it was a medical director position in a smaller hospitalist program. Was that in Grand Rapids or was that somewhere else?
It was in Grand Rapids. It was actually part of the Butterworth campus medical staff division for hospitalist.
And how many hospitalists did you have responsibility for in that role?
Well, there was two groups that actually worked out of the Grand Rapids campuses. And by this time, the medical staff was part of both the Butterworth and the Blodgett campus. And so the groups consisted of the group that I was a member of, the other group, which was primarily based out of the other campus, the Blodgett campus. In total, we had about 35 physicians, and we had probably about 10 to 15 advanced practice professionals. However, they were not part of the medical staff. They were supervised, and their work was attributable to the physician of record.
So how many years were you in that medical director position before you transitioned into your next role?
Well, actually, I carried that title not only for a few years, but I also then added a second title, because in the employed group that I was a part of, I was asked to take on the role of being division chief, which meant then I was responsible for not just the medical staff components of physician leadership, but I was also responsible for the employer-based responsibilities of our physician group.
Was your group an independent group, or was it really part of were you all employed by Spectrum Health or by the hospital?
When I had taken on these positions, I was part of a physician-owned multi-specialty group. Our contract to provide services was with the hospital. And so that's where I had the agreement with the hospital to form the medical director responsibilities. And then it was through my employer, which I was a physician-owned member of, that I led in the role of division chief.
Well, how was your time split between clinical and administrative responsibilities?
by this time, I had 75% clinical and 25% administrative.
Can you give us an idea of what the scope of your administrative responsibilities were in that role?
Yeah, so first what we did is actually make sure that we had to, pay attention to how we recruited and retained our physicians as well as our advanced practice providers. And so that was part of it. The second part, because we have a dyad leadership model, is I partnered with our practice manager to be able to make sure that we looked at how we were set up operationally. We wanted to make sure that we had the ability to, minimize the expense that we needed to have as far as whether it was nurses in our office or even potentially what we had as far as support staff in the office that helped us generate our rounding list each day as a simple function of matter. That's one thing that we had to spend a lot of time on. So I really had that component of looking at it from a clinical perspective. I had to look at it from our employment-based perspective of physicians, but then I also had to stay very attuned into what we needed to do operationally.
Did you have a leadership or an administrative role that became fully administrative where you had no clinical responsibilities?
I did. Several years later, I had gone through a transition where I was really doing two different administrative roles and two different clinical roles. But because of change in leadership and being asked to take on a chief medical officer role, I had to actually move away quite a bit from my clinical duties. So then, fortunately, I had some partners that were engaged in some of the clinical work that I was doing, and they were able to take on that responsibility. The reason why I bring that up is because I also had started to do work in a preoperative assessment center. And so it wasn't just you're a hospitalist and it was easy to be replaced. There was other components of my clinical duties that I needed to make sure somebody could take on because I needed to be available in that administrative space 100% of the time.
Did you notice a change in the way that physicians who were primarily clinical viewed your decision or your change into a completely non-clinical role? Did it impact your relationship with other physicians?
Well, not that I noticed. However, I did have a lot of conversations with different individuals that I had known over the years. And, the one thing was, is I was viewed as being a strong clinical performing physician. And for the most part, being well-liked helped me because I had established a lot of trusting relationships. But I will say that, for myself, it felt different. It felt odd. I never went into medical school to become a non-clinical physician leader. But what I did need to do is make sure that I talked to different people about what I did. Because, the way in which you bring up the question is important because there's a lot of physicians who start to feel like it's an us versus them mentality of you're not doing what I do anymore. How could you know what I'm experiencing? And it had to resonate, I think, with a lot of physician leaders when you hear those sort of statements to make sure that you heard it and you felt it so that you can make sure that what you did in your physician leadership role would still matter to the frontline clinicians that needed to do their job. The prime example is EMR, bringing in electronic health record and going through all the training that's necessary and it not necessarily helping you get through your day is quite a challenge. And so if you're not seeing patients in your administrative role, and yet you're prescribing training and the things that are necessary to make sure get documented in a timely manner, you need to be able to make sure that you're working with the right folks and they understand your concerns of what needs to be done to make that system better. And, being very intentional about that with a lot of not just my friends, but some of them just being colleagues, really helped me go a long way at making sure that there was the engagement as well as the purposeful change to improve, the system for them to be able to do their jobs better. So it took intention to to be able to make sure that this was going to be a role in which I could be successful in.
We've heard a lot. There's been a lot written and published about burnout in medicine. And I think that in that area, at least my experience has been that the physicians who are working clinically primarily oftentimes look at non-clinical leaders very differently from that perspective, because they feel that we lose the perspective of what it's like to manage the varying inputs that come at them during the day. And you mentioned the electronic medical record. That's one of the large areas, I think, in the workflow today that becomes very frustrating for physicians. Specifically, what strategies, you mentioned being very intentional about it, but at the same time, as a chief medical officer of a fairly large health organization, it seems that it would have been challenging to have enough touches with the frontline physicians. How did you manage that?
Well, that's a very good question. I will tell you that the way I took the approach was making sure that the formal leaders, the ones that had titles, were the individuals that were correctly chosen to do their job. And in addition to that, making sure that there was the right development in their leadership role for them to do their job. And that's really critical. At one point, at least in my position as chief medical officer, I will tell you that there was just over 100 leaders, physician leaders within the medical group that had time allotted to be able to work with other physicians, whether it was in their section, their division, or their department. Now, I will tell you that we didn't have a program where leadership development was in place before each one of them were put into their formal roles. So a lot of the work we had to do along the way was make sure that we brought in educational components to help them learn and grow into how they could be more effective as a physician leader. And it takes time to be able to do that. And some of it is just making sure that as these physician leaders go through these educational courses, that they're really not only ready, but also willing to go through some of that individual change. Because, you know, the requirements of what they were before as a, quote, medical doctor to now being a formal physician leader have changed. And the pace of change is coming fast and furious. And you brought up burnout. Burnout is a real concern, and it does require all of us to be engaged in that specific topic to be able to figure out how to address, you know, who's experiencing burnout or who is actually a potential to become burned out, and what is it that a leader can do to help mitigate that. And it's not just the leader, but where does the leader go in other resources? So that's the type of development, that's the type of person that needs to be engaged in this type of role to say, not only do I want to make this place better, but I want to make it better for all of us, including you. And when they say you, they're talking about the person right in front of them. And I think that is just so important to have that degree of empathy and understanding, but then also have the knowledge of how to do that work.
So you had moved into physician champion roles, medical director roles in the way that I think many of us have, and almost chosen because of our clinical competency and our proficiency at the bedside. But yet you just alluded to an issue that I think affects many physician leaders, and that is that there isn't oftentimes a formal training in leadership issues. And these issues are very complex. How did you, as the chief medical officer, how did you find a leadership development model that really helped your physician leaders, the physicians that reported to you, function more effectively?
Yeah, some of it was actually generated within our organization. Some of it was actually partnered with services or consultants that offered up maybe programs or resources to be able to help us. I'll give you an example, maybe on two fronts. A few years ago, as the medical group was growing, there was a lot of questions that were raised about our employment contracts. Not so much in questions to challenge it, but just trying to understand the language and certain aspects of what the contract meant. So we actually engaged with our attorney firm that supported our system, and we talked about employment law. And we ended up putting our department chiefs and division chiefs, as well as with their dyad partners, through five different courses. It was really five different sessions, I should say, of employment law training. And part of that focused on the employment contracts themselves, but we also focused on malpractice and what that means and some of the things to be at least attuned to with what could be potential hazards of being a physician leader, you know, when you're talking to somebody who is going through performance-based concerns. Well, good or bad, you could say that the sessions were extremely successful. Good because we did fulfill what we needed to. Bad because there was so much knowledge for these physician leaders that for them to gain that we, you know, unfortunately did not have the sessions, you know, much sooner in their physician leadership career. So that was really good. And that was something we built internally. Another one that we had done is we had partnered with a firm called Health Management Academy, who really does focus on physician leadership development. And we partnered with them to be able to bring in not only the curriculum, which we were very much a part of in drafting, but also some of the knowledgeable experts in their area to be able to talk about certain topics that were relevant to a physician leader. It could stem all the way from just the general finances and what is important for a physician leader, not to teach them how to become a CFO, but really just to be able to look at a profit and loss statement and to understand what it meant and how certain numbers were attributable to certain categories and how that led your financial stability or instability of an organization, all the way to what do you need to do as far as quality improvement aspects, as well as to the topic you've just mentioned a few minutes ago, burnout, being able to have the right conversation with the group of leaders to talk about what are we doing, what are other organizations doing to address burnout, and then taking actionable steps and how do we do that. So we've done that by internal usage of our own either resources in the organization to build programs or actually partnering with consultants to do that. And I think it's actually been extremely, extremely well received. And quite honestly, I think it's actually produced some great success for a lot of individuals who maybe were quite skeptical even before they got into the programs.
And it sounds like you wish that you had either personally had some of that training or that you had initiated that training for the physician leaders that reported to you earlier in their career.
That's true. And in fact, you know, some of it is, you know, you don't realize what you don't have until you start realizing what is the problem. And, you know, for me, sometimes it's been the fact that I've learned through a lot of, if you will, experiences. I kind of jokingly say I've earned my journeyman's card of physician leadership. And really with that, you know, I've seen not only different courses, but I've also read different books. I've also gained a lot of knowledge through mentorship and other physician leaders and just being able to talk about what challenges they're facing and how did they address them.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate your comments today, and I appreciate you spending the time with me to record this podcast. Well, that concludes our third episode of Beyond the Bedside. Next week, we'll be back with the second installment of Doug's interview. I hope you got some great insights from his comments today. As you can tell, there are many opportunities for individual physicians and organizations to avail themselves of development curriculum for physicians as they transition into leadership roles. In my 30 plus years of experience and my own transition into non-clinical hospital administration, I have participated in many development opportunities for physicians. I love mentoring physicians who are considering this transition from a clinical into a non-clinical role. That was really my reason for starting the podcast Beyond the Bedside, was to help physicians who are interested in a different clinical career, doing something in addition to clinical medicine, or completely leaving clinical medicine and focusing full-time on non-clinical careers. I would be happy to talk with any of you who are listening to this podcast and who have questions or who are interested in your personal or professional development and your readiness for a non-clinical role. You can visit my website, beyondthebedside.net. Take a look at the speaker notes from today. We'll have some links to a variety of websites that can provide you with more information. Several websites I have found particularly valuable, including the American Association for Physician Leadership, the American College of Healthcare Executives, are two examples of great websites for physicians who are looking for opportunities to get more knowledge and skills to prepare them for a transition to non-clinical medicine. There will also be several links to some academic institutions that provide additional formal education for physicians. There are many MBA programs today that accommodate a physician's schedule, Master's in Health Systems Administration, Master's in Public Health. There are just a tremendous number of opportunities for you out there that you may find useful as you contemplate this transition. And as I said before, I'm always happy to talk with you. Please don't hesitate to email me or leave a comment on the beyondthebedside.net website, and I will get back to you and would love having the opportunity just to talk with you about your concerns, your issues, your successes, or where you feel you have opportunities or needs that I may be able to help you with. I'm happy to help in any way that you think will be valuable to you. So thanks again for listening. Thanks for sticking it out until the end of the podcast. And we'll be back next week with episode number 4 and the conclusion of my interview with Dr. Douglas Apple.